The Jets Collective is on the air. The 2026 NFL Draft is officially in the books. Welcome in, everybody. My name is Jake Asman, joined, as always, with Rich Samidi and Brandon Tierney. Gentlemen, we have made it. The Jets entered night one with two picks in the first round. They came away with three picks in the first round. Darren Mooji continued to make a bunch of deals. All in all, the Jets have a brand new 2026 draft class that we will discuss. As always, the Jets Collective is presented by Prize Picks. BT, Rich, how are we feeling? Rich, you were at the facility, so I can't even imagine what it was like in real time watching all the craziness unfold in night one.
Yeah, I mean, we're like a lot of the spectators. You know, we have a massive TV set up in the press room, and we're just sitting there watching the picks come off. And at the end of the night, the Jets officials, you know, Mooji and Aaron Glenn, they come down and they talk to us. So it's a lot of waiting around like folks are doing at home in front of their TV. So that's, you know, they feed us very well. I think I gained a few pounds over the 3 day span, but we'll have to start working it off now. But it was good. It was a really cool experience.
I think it was very obvious. The Jets had a clear feel pretty good about what, you know, what Mooji, and we've talked about this. I think we all have, you know, maybe varying degrees in terms of confidence, but we all look at the early returns for Mooji as very good. So they had a couple of things they had to do, a couple of spots they had to address, a couple of unconventional things which will hit. But the energy right now for the Jets is through the roof. Now, it doesn't mean that these people will be right, but people who cover the draft and that's their only job, everybody said the Jets crushed it, and I agree.
Well said. Well said. And I think if you're a Jet fan, even if you're the most negative Jet fan in the world, even if you're someone who wanted, let's say, Arvell Reese instead of David Bailey, you can't argue with the player they got. I mean, they got the guy who was the most productive college football pass rusher. And some of the other moves they made, I mean, a Jet draft that features two pass catchers going in the first round. Rich, correct me if I'm wrong. That's never happened before. So there was real history made from that standpoint, real history made with the Jets having three first round picks for only the third time in franchise history. A lot of history was made in that first night alone.
Yeah, it's the first time in 57 years that a team drafted a wide receiver and a tight end in the first round. So go figure that. I mean, I think you have to go back to like 1969 or something like that with the Rams and 49ers did it that year. So that was unusual. I think, you know, we talked about all those players, you know, Bailey, not a surprise. I thought that was a good pick. You know, I kind of had a feeling they were going to go Bailey. I think if I had my druthers, I would have taken Reese, but I totally understand the pick. It's the premium position. It's the value. That's why they took it. I mean, Reese goes five to the Giants. They're playing him at an inside linebacker. So the Jets drafted Bailey, because he is an edge rusher. Next to quarterback, edge rusher is the most valuable position. So positional value and college production were the main reasons they took him.
And college winners. I mean, that's the theme here. All these guys, really, with the exception of really Clemson. Clemson, pretty much everybody won at a very high level. So that doesn't automatically equate to bringing that winning to the pro level, but it's certainly a good start. And the other thing, too, I remember saying this on my show, I mean, all the drafts that I've watched as a Jets fan, there's always like one guy from some small school that I never saw play. I think every Jet fan, even if you flipped on college football, like in the most passing manner, you saw every one of these dudes play. So it's like familiarity, which is fun.
Yeah, that's a great point, BT. And just, you know, you think back to how the night was playing out. So after the Bailey pick at two, the Jets are sitting there at 16. Your guy, Casey Concepcion, by the way, was on the board. But we didn't think that Mekhi Levin was going to be there. We certainly didn't think that Omar Cooper was necessarily going to be there. And the Jets take Kenyon Sadiq, who I know you were very high on, BT. But, Rich, you were the first, I think, in the Jet media space to even bring up the fact that you heard rumblings that the Jets really liked Kenyon Sadiq. You didn't think he'd be there when push came to shove. He is there. So kind of walk us through in real time what you were thinking when Sadiq was there. So was Mekhi Levin. So was Omar Cooper. And obviously the Jets took a tight end at number 16.
Actually, I have a funny story. This happened in the press room before the Sadiq pick. So my editor in Bristol, Connecticut, was texting. He texts every year. He just texts me the Jets pick. He gets it right from the league. So as soon as the pick is submitted, I get the text. We're not allowed to tweet it out because we're not allowed to tip the picks. But I get, you know, the Bailey pick right away. And so then there's a long space between two, and we're into the teens now. All of a sudden, he texts me, wow, with like 10 W's. And so I'm like, what? And then I texted him, what? And he texted me back, Ty Simpson. And I announce in the press room, everyone's around the TV. I go, guys, I think the Jets just traded up for Ty Simpson. And every press room, I created some false hysteria in the press room. And then he texted me back. He goes, no, the Rams. And so for a fleeting moment there, we had thoughts of the Jets trading up for Ty Simpson. You know, in hindsight, that was never a possibility. The Sadiq pick, look, I would have gone Mekhi Lemon there. He ends up going like, what, four picks later to Philadelphia. He had some bad interviews that turned off some teams, maybe the Jets as well. But the Eagles are a really good organization. They thought enough of him to take him at 20. I like Sadiq. To me, he's boom or bust. He's either going to be great or he's not going to develop. Limited college production. First receiver, I'll just throw this stat out, first tight end in 15 years to go in the first round and have less than 1,000 yards in career receiving in college. So they're basing it all on the measurables, the height, the weight, the speed. That's what that pick was.
I didn't want Mekhi Lemon. They talk about the some of the bad interviews. I mean, his post-draft interview wasn't exactly a real stabilizing one either. I mean, I don't know what that guy's doing. What's really happened here, guys? The Jets have gone from a mundane, pedestrian, average speed team. Jets are one of the fastest offenses in football. Now, even if Sadiq is not what, you know, we all hope he will become, you know, when you run a 4-3-4, you got to pay attention to that dude, which opens up space for Garrett Wilson, who's the sub 4-4, for Breece Hall, who's the sub 4-4. I mean, you look around across the board, the Jets have some dudes that can move. And now you really force the opponents to, you know, to kind of pick a poison. And then if they go light, to try to stop that speed. Now Braylon Allen runs it down their throat and a little Isaiah Davis. Like, it just opens up so many possibilities. But make no mistake about it, the Jets are electric fast all of a sudden. Jake, they are fast.
They added a ton of speed.
The one thing I would caution about Sadiq, and he is fast, sub 4.4 for a tight end. It's like the fastest 40 time in the last, like, 23 years, you know, for a tight end prospect. So the guy can run. However, he is fairly new to the position. He did not play tight end in high school. He didn't start playing until college. And he really only started 1 year. So it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for him. I caution fans, yes, he's got a really high ceiling, but don't expect him to be Brock Bowers as a rookie. There's going to be a growing period, a transition period. He had 6 drops last year, yeah, working on the hand-eye coordination a little bit. I love his potential, but it might take a little bit of time to get there.
Yeah, and look, the way I looked at it in real time, I like Sadiq as a prospect a lot. I just didn't want the Jets to be the guinea pigs for taking him when there's so much history, not even just Jet history, but just about, hey, do you take a tight end that high? Like, not everyone's going to be Brock Bowers. Not everyone's going to be Loveland. So I was against the Jets doing it, with the caveat being I never thought in a million years, Rich, they'd be in position to then get a player that I would have been totally fine with at pick 16, and Omar Cooper Jr. Now I'm really excited, because not that there's less pressure on Kenyon Sadiq, but it feels like the Jets are going to step into like the 21st century and try and actually have a modern offensive scheme with 12 personnel, having Mason Taylor play inline, and Sadiq could be a matchup nightmare as a power slot. I'm just excited to see what they could do now. But getting Omar Cooper and getting the fifth-year option on him that Muji talked about, and only having to trade a fifth-round comp pick to move up from 33 to get to 30, I thought that was the best move of the night for the Jets, and it kind of solidified my feeling that night one was a major success for this team.
Well, the reason why they traded up is because they thought Buffalo was going to take Cooper at 31. And so they anticipated that was their intel. And it's funny how as soon as they traded up and took him, Buffalo traded out.
Yep.
You know, Buffalo trades out with Tennessee. And so that's why the Jets did the Cooper deal. They did it because I think he was rated very close to Sadiq on their draft board. And also they wanted the fifth-year option, you know, so they wanted to get back in. Now, they did lose, like you said, the fifth-round comp pick. They lost pick 33, which is a valuable pick, you know, if you want to trade it, you know, on day two of the draft. The first,
unless you're the Niners, round. Rich, you took a guy that never should have went at pick 33, and they're getting
crushed. Yeah, no, I like the pick. I mean, in fact, I was just looking before we went on, you know, we at ESPN, we use the Scouts Incorporated, a scouting group, you know, that evaluates talent. The Jets got 3 of the top 24 players on the Scouts Inc. draft board with Bailey, Sadiq, and Cooper. You know, Cooper was 24th on their draft board. So anytime you can get three players out of the top 24 in a draft, that's pretty good.
And you extend that out with Pons. I know we'll get to him as well. I mean, I love what they did there. So I don't know if he's top 40 or top 45, but he was certainly somebody who was incredibly highly thought of and very well might be one of the best players from the draft. Rich, do us a favor. You said something interesting, how the Jets had some intel with the Bills. They might take Cooper. Can you explain, even if it's briefly, because a lot of my buddies have asked me this as well. Like, part of the business of the NFL, when you move up to make some, or when you move up, you've got to know what the other teams are thinking. How do you know what the other teams are thinking? Because you're competing against each other. Is that just contacts and friendships and they give you a sense? How do you find out what a team might do?
Yeah, that's a great question.
When you're in your own war room, Rich.
Yeah, the Jets, every team in the league does their own mock draft. You know, they put a board up of each team's needs and mm-hmm. they rank the needs. So the Jets are sitting there and they see the Bills are looking for a wide receiver. It seems like the Bills are always looking for a wide receiver. So they're looking for a wide receiver in that spot. And they're like reporters. You know, they call around to their friends. They hear stuff. Sometimes teams get stuff from reporters that they use in their intel as they're building their board of team needs. Like, for instance, like the Jets did a pretty good job of keeping their pick secret at number two, right? You know, the media kind of was guessing right up until I contacted officials from three different teams that had high picks on Thursday morning, and all of them told me that the Jets were taking Bailey. In fact, one of the persons from one of these teams said he knew 100% that the Jets were taking Bailey. So while maybe people in the media were kind of guessing, the teams around the Jets picking knew they were taking Bailey. So word gets out. You know, word just gets out. It's hard to keep things secret. And so the Jets had good intel that the Bills were really eyeing Omar Cooper.
Well, Rich, that's interesting because just getting back to how everything unfolded with the Bailey and Reese decision, it just felt like even like leading up to the draft the day before, David Bailey's doing an interview with SNY and he's saying, you know, the GM's name wrong. He's confusing Darren Mooji for Monty Ossenforth, the GM of the Cardinals. So people are like, oh, is he going to Arizona at three? You know, he's basically making the Jets sound like they were just any other team he met with at the combine. He even referenced the canceled top 30 visit. I just, again, maybe it ends up not mattering at all if David Bailey's awesome, but it's just going to be like another thing that's used eventually against the Jets. If Bailey's not a big time player, people are going to say, well, could you really invest a number two pick in a guy you didn't even do all your due diligence with and have him into your facility?
Well, do you think having him in the facility for 4 hours is gonna make the difference in whether he's a good player or not? I think that was completely overblown. Look, the Jets took him out to a steak dinner in Lubbock, Texas. They spent a couple of hours with him there. The Jets have three members on their coaching staff that were at Stanford on the Stanford staff when Bailey was in Stanford. So they have insider info that way. And he's a clean prospect. He's a good kid. He comes from a good family. His brother went to Harvard. He went to Stanford. I mean, they're obviously a smart family. Yeah. So they just didn't feel like they wanted to schlep him across the country and come in for a visit at their facility. I think the conspiracy theorists, you know, when we talked about it in depth, you know, a couple of weeks ago when it happened pretty much in real time for our show, I just think it got overblown.
Can I tell you what I love too? Yeah, I love the Stanford pedigree before he went to Texas Tech. I love that his brother played at Harvard. Those are all great things. I love even more than that, that Bailey and Kenyon Sadiq don't have social media. So there's going to be no drama. Like, you know, very limited presence. Like, I don't know if you guys, yeah, Jake, I know you follow. And Rich, I know you're a big baseball guy too. But like the Mets have lost, what, 17 of 19. You got Vientos putting stuff up on Instagram. I mean, they can't even score more than two runs. Like, read the room, man. So, and I think that Jets for a while got away from that. Even though Sauce is a really good young man. And, you know, Breece Hall tweets a lot. You know, Garrett Wilson's great kid, but he's chimed in a little bit. The less noise, the better. And Bailey and Sadiq, I don't know if they'll be stars, but they won't ruin things on Instagram. I can promise you that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody the Jets drafted this entire – usually some draft classes, you have some red flags and some character issues. As far as I can tell, all these guys are really clean prospects. You know, I think they did a good job of vetting all these guys. That's not to say – something bad, you know, you never know. You know, these guys get a ton of money in their pocket, although most of them have money in their pocket now from college. But, you know, you put look, David Bailey is going to get $56 million guaranteed. Mm. That's what his contract is slotted at. That is just mind-boggling money for a young man to come in, and you hope that he's he's grounded enough to handle it, because that's life-changing, man. That is life-changing money.
He's grounded. He just got to be good. I'm not worried about it. He just got to get to the quarterback. Hey, do your job. We know you're grounded. Go get 8 sacks as a rookie. Make it pay off, you know?
Yeah. Well said. Well said. We're presented by Prize Picks. We'll have a draft and Jet-related prize pick lineup for us to discuss coming up. If you're new around here, this is the Jets Collective. We come at you every single week during the season. We'll be live Tuesdays breaking down whatever the heck the New York Jets do in their previous game. We're with you throughout the offseason. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. And for you podcast listeners out there, the Jets Collective is available on Apple, Spotify, or iHeart, wherever you get your podcast. We're going through each pick the Jets made. We'll assign a final grade at the end, and we'll definitely spend some time extensively talking about the quarterback the Jets did, in fact, draft on day 3 in Cade Klubnik. But let's get to night 2. The Jets only had one pick. Rich, it was supposed to be at pick 44, and then Darren Mooji traded down, acquired an extra 4th-round pick in a deal with the Detroit Lions. So you have that Glenn Dan Campbell connection in this scenario here. And with the Jets on the clock at number 50, they took basically a reincarnated version of their current head coach, D'Angelo Pons, the corner from Indiana. His comp by Daniel Jeremiah on the NFL Network broadcast was Aaron Glenn. The Jets posted a great video of Mooji pointing to Glenn. Hey, look, they're talking about you and Pons. So that was a cool moment. But from a standpoint of just drafting a really good player, I love this pick. Pons is one of my favorite players in the class. He was a gamer. He made plays. We were all watching Dante Moore against Mendoza that night in the playoff game. And first pass from Dante Moore, pick 6 to D'Angelo Pons, set the tone for that blowout win by Indiana. So I was giddy with this. I love that they got an extra 4th as well. What were your thoughts, Rich, on the D'Angelo Pons selection?
I went back into my archives and got pulled up the story that I wrote the day the Jets drafted Aaron Glenn, just to get for Newsday. Nice. And I pulled up the height, weight, and speed, virtually identical to Pons. The height, the weight, the speed, like 4.3 something. I mean, it was all identical. It was eerie. He's a really good player. He's a first-round talent. If he were 2 inches taller, he'd be a first-round cornerback. Big plays, physical. I mean, he knocked Ty Simpson out of the game in the Rose Bowl. He's a physical player. I asked Aaron Glenn, which position is he going to play? He said they're going to cross-train him at inside at nickel and then outside where he played in college. So he's going to have that. The game has changed, though. When Aaron Glenn came into the league, the receivers weren't as big as they are now. The cornerbacks weren't as big as they are now. So I researched it. Last year in the NFL, there were only 6 corners, 5'9 or smaller. One of them, by the way, DJ Reed, who we know very well. So, I mean, and most of those guys were slot guys. So maybe Pons' future is in the slot. I'm not sure, but I thought it was a good pick. I thought they got good value at number 50.
He plays big, as we know. And, it's not saying it's a perfect comparison here, but there's certainly in the old NBA, like Charles Barkley, played like he was 7 feet. Like there's just certain people who have that extra gear, that extra oomph, and just felt like he lowers his pads. I think he's got great leverage, great center of gravity. He could run like the wind. And let's face it, when you talk about, and he's a winner, player evaluation, if Aaron Glenn, and obviously Mooji's making the final call, but they're working in concert there, if Aaron Glenn can't, identify every flaw and every asset for Pons, who's basically Aaron Glenn 30 years later, well, then Aaron Glenn's just not going to make it. I mean, that's got to be a layup, man. He's got to put on the film and immediately see either himself or a variation of that, and not just the good. But the things that would prevent you from drafting him, they didn't see much. Neither did I. When they made that pick, I didn't love the Jets' next pick, which we'll get to. That confused me. But I absolutely love – he jumped – you put on Indiana, you see him immediately hitting somebody.
Yeah, the only thing maybe you can second guess a little bit – I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Emmanuel McNeil Warren was still on the board.
Safety.
And, he went to – he went 58, a highly productive safety. The Jets ended up grabbing a safety later on with their last pick. But, I like the Pons pick. I think he's got a chance to start. I mean, as Thomas is coming back from shoulder surgery, he showed some flashes, but they got Nashon Wright and they got Pons. So I think Pons on the outside could end up being a starter this year.
Rich, do you think that the fact that the Dolphins right in front of the Jets, they drafted Jacob Rodriguez, the linebacker from Texas Tech that I know a lot of Jet fans really were eyeing for the Jets to take. Do you think that had anything to do with the trade down? I know Muji was asked about it. He said they had like five or six players they felt good about, and they knew they'd end up with one of them by moving only back from 44 to 50. But did you hear anything since about if the Jets were seriously interested in Rodriguez and similar to the Bills wanting Cooper, and then they traded out after the Jets made their move? Did the Jets trade out after the Miami Dolphins made their move and got Jacob Rodriguez?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. I believe them when they said they had, you don't trade down unless you're comfortable. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, it's possible, but I think corner was probably a bigger need for the Jets than linebacker. They didn't go linebacker in this draft. Obviously, they have a lot of confidence in Jamie and Sherwood. I don't know if I have the same amount of confidence. I mean, they're going to let it roll with him again and maybe hoping that Demario Davis's presence has a positive effect on Sherwood, because Sherwood's got to play better this year. And so, yeah, that was an interesting scenario. But in the end, they get a corner who might be a starter for them for many years.
As we move now to day three, this is where it gets interesting. And let me kind of set this up by bringing up what happened last year. In real time, myself and many Jet fans despised what the Jets did on day three. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt because they were a new regime, but they took Arian Smith, who was graded as a seventh rounder at best, in the fourth round. You look back, and other than maybe Malachi Moore, I don't know if there's any player on day three a year ago that is going to have a real role on this team. And even with Moore, I don't know if he's guaranteed a starting spot. I don't think he is at this point. So that's kind of the backdrop to now setting up what they did on day three. They started the day, Rich. They had three fourth-round picks. They take Darryl Jackson Jr. from Florida State, defensive tackle, at pick 103. And then, rather than just maybe wait until they're on the clock again at pick 128, Darren Muji makes a trade, and he comes back up so the New York Jets can draft Cade Klubnik. We'll spend a lot of time talking about Klubnik, but let's just start with the pick at 103. What was your take on the Darryl Jackson Jr. selection?
He goes 103. Scouts Incorporated had him as the 108th prospect, so probably right about the same. So I thought the value was there. And at first glance, you're saying another defensive tackle? Do they really need another defensive tackle? But look what's on the horizon. Harrison Phillips and David Onyemata are, you know, they're on 1 year deals basically. So they're going to be free agents after this year. So I think this was a future pick. I do not think Darryl Jackson will be playing a lot. This, you know, he'll probably be an inactive player for much of the year. It's essentially a redshirt year for him. He is a massive guy. I mean, he is just a big dude. He's got 11-inch hands. He's got an 86-inch wingspan. I mean, that's like a Patrick Ewing kind of wingspan. He's an interesting guy. He was only, I'm just reading off my notes here. He was 200 pounds as a high school junior. Then he got up to 340 by his last year in college.
My goodness.
He's just a big dude who's very strong, who needs a lot of refinement. But like I said, I think this is a redshirt year for him. It's a future pick where the position a year from now will look different than it does now.
I look at the, you know, starting with him and then obviously with the safety out of Kansas State. Like, I went into that day saying, all right, developmental quarterback, safety at some point, interior offensive line, obviously a guard, check, check, check. And I know we'll get back to the quarterback. With Jackson, I was kind of stunned about the quarterback, but I was also really surprised with Jackson. I walked into a diner. We were in Staten Island. My son had a baseball game, and it was right after it. And literally, just as we sat down before the eggs and the pickles and the coleslaw, but before the eggs came, it was literally the Jets pick right away. My son's like, "Oh, what do you think?" I said, "I don't." That position really surprised me. I could even justify moving up 18 slots for a quarterback that a lot of people don't really think that they should have moved up 18 slots to get, as a better move than Jackson, especially when you tell me that he, now he could be wrong, but that he's going to be a redshirt for the most part, just take a pass and watch. Like, that's like sixth round stuff. I don't want a fourth round pick for a team that won three games, not really having much of a chance to suit up. I don't think that they had that luxury. And it's not so much the player, it's more what they have, other stuff they needed. That one surprised me.
I wanted an interior offensive lineman there. I know they ended up taking one later, but there were some guys I thought it would have made some sense for the New York Jets there. Sam Hecht, who ironically ended up going in the same spot that the Jets originally owned with the Bengals with that trade they made for Klubnik. He was the center out of Kansas State that I know a lot of people seem to like. So there were some guys I thought could have made some sense there for the Jets. I don't really even dislike the Darryl Jackson Jr. pick. I just think they didn't need to then trade up for Cade Klubnik. I get it. He's a quarterback, and maybe, Rich, you've heard their teams that were definitely going to take Cade if the Jets didn't make the move. But I think the Jets could have just sat where they were at 128, and they would have been able to draft Cade Klubnik with that pick.
Yeah. One more thing on the Jackson thing. I think the old George Young, the former Giants GM, had he called it the planet theory. There's only so many people on this planet who are that big, you know, who can run around and play football. And I think Darryl Jackson Jr. falls into that category. So I think, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it. I was thinking more down the road. I did have a problem with the Klubnik pick. I thought that was a reach. I think a lot of talent evaluators had him more as a sixth or seventh round guy. I think they feared that someone was going to take him right there in the fourth round. Now, interestingly enough, they jumped right ahead of Denver. So I'm thinking, maybe would Denver take him as a possible backup? And it turns out Cade Klubnik's college roommate last year at Clemson was Caleb Nix, the younger brother of Bo Nix. So maybe Denver thinks they have a little inside intel there on the player. They kind of fall in love with the player. They need a backup for Bo Nix. So maybe the Jets thought, you know, Muji probably had some information from his old team, Denver, so that's why they moved up. Otherwise, I can't see. I just thought he was like a sixth or seventh round pick. And the Jets, this is a Frank Reich pick. Frank Reich fell in love with him. He went down there. He worked him out. He spent a lot of time with him. They had good interviews with him. And the Jets felt like if we don't get this quarterback now, there's a big drop off until the next quarterback. And so that's why they went ahead and did it.
We all agreed they needed a developmental quarterback. So nobody's pushing back on the concept. It's about the player, okay? And I get it. I mean, last year he stunk. The year before he was phenomenal. Even as a freshman, he was the ACC championship game as a MVP. The year after that, he started all 12 or 13 games. He's played a lot of football. And everything that we read, and Rich, you talked about this as well, like there was a connectivity on the mental part of the game. Like they liked the way he processed the board, the way he spit back, you know, concepts and like the brain and all that other stuff. Yeah, I mean, do I wish he was 6'3", 235 instead of 6'2", 209? Sure. But hey, listen, it wasn't like two or three moves. When you jump 18 slots, you're telling me you don't like him, you love him. And if this was a different regime, if this was Maccagnan or this was Idzik, I would say, no, what the hell are we doing here? Muji, not blind optimism, but enough faith and enough equity with me. And I think a lot of Jet fans would say, okay, little unconventional, but I'm going to trust you on this. But I don't have a problem with it.
So I texted a scouting source from another team as soon as the Jets made this pick. And I'm going to read you right from the text that he sent me on his Klubnik scouting report. He said, put together a quality 24 season statistically, but doesn't have a particularly strong arm and has a skinny type build. He was way overhyped as a potential first round quarterback for this year. He came back to earth this season, but Clemson also had a lot of injuries at the skill position and his production suffered. He did persevere and finish the season all the way through in a cold bowl game at Yankee Stadium. He showed a lot of grit, resolve, and determination this year. He comes from a wealthy family, so there's always been a question about his leadership and whether he felt entitled or not. He said he's probably a backup. His ceiling is probably as a backup or a quality number three guy in your classroom. So that was one scout's opinion. He's a good athlete. He's 6'2". His arm strength is okay.
Yeah.
Accuracy. He's known for his accuracy. Even he said that on our Zoom call. He goes, I make my money with my accuracy. And so he went through a lot at Clemson. He had a fantastic year 2 years ago. Last year wasn't a good year. And the Jets are betting on his past performances. And they see some upside. And they needed a developmental guy. So you just hope he's not the next James Morgan.
Yeah. Well, God almighty, Morgan. Yeah, that's a good call. Wow. I think he was a fourth-round pick, Morgan, right? I mean, no matter who they took as a developmental quarterback, Drew Aller, Nussmeier, I mean, there'd be criticisms. Oh, he doesn't do this. He doesn't see that. Oh, big arm, but he doesn't know what's in front of him, doesn't process well. Listen, I just it seemed, and I know I keep saying this, right? Muji seems to have a clear feel for what he wants. And when you're that aggressive, like the certain traits and non-negotiable characteristics, when you're that proactive and you go up and get somebody, I'm not going to bang on it right now. I mean, we all know they needed to get a quarterback to maybe eventually become the number two down the road. Why can't it be this kid? I think it could be.
Well, the way I look at it is I was never going to criticize them for any chance they took on the day, on the third day of the draft of that position. If you just go back and look, I mean, everyone will bring up, oh, well, what about Dak Prescott or Kirk Cousins or Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy?
Tom Brady.
Like, people, you could come up with the historic outlier, but for all those guys, now start naming all the other ones as you look through year after year at these guys that amount to nothing, including the great James Morgan, who Rich was kind enough to bring up already in this episode. So there's just so many examples of that. So if Frank Reich really liked Klubnik and Bill Musk, Grave, who's got a ton of experience, really like Klubnik, and Muji, who played quarterback in college before Kevin O'Connell, his roommate, beat him out, and Muji converted to be a wide receiver. If they all liked Klubnik, did I like them not burning a fourth, but did I like them moving up and trading away the fourth they got in the Pons trade down to do it? I didn't love it, but I'm also not going to freak out over it, and it's not going to dramatically impact my feeling that the Jets crushed it the first 2 days of this draft, which they had to do, and that's way bigger than taking a dart throw on a project quarterback who in all likelihood is not the long-term answer. If he develops into a long-term backup, that's a win for a fourth-round pick.
Fair. Real quick, guys, I don't mean to talk too much, but I don't want to lose this point because I know we're going to move on. To me, there's an overwhelming amount of evidence there. Fourth, fifth, sixth round quarterbacks. Oh, let's take a flyer. Never works out. I get it. But think of, and I'd love to see a detailed study on this. Think about the teams that are always throwing darts, trying to find that guy in the fourth or the fifth round. They're generally bad franchises with unstable coaches and bad offensive lines. We can't quantify the amount of quarterbacks who didn't make it because of the wrong situation, but we know that that matters. And I'm not saying that the Jets are the right situation yet, but I think that the context within all those middle to late round quarterbacks that have failed, how many went to bad situations? I would guess many.
Well, I'll throw this in. We talked a lot in the previous episodes about Ty Simpson and his lack of experience, 15 college starts. Well, here at Klubnik, you have a guy who started 40 games at Clemson. Mm. So he has played a lot of football. He played at the highest level. He led his Texas team at Westlake High, by the way, where Drew Brees went. Westlake High, undefeated back-to-back state championships. The first player since Kyler Murray to do that in the state of Texas. Mm. We know what the level of football is in Texas. So he has played high-level football at times. He just hasn't been consistent. He's just been erratic. And if the Jets could bottle that consistency, maybe they have something.
Rich, just to follow up on Klubnik before we get to the last two picks the Jets made, Darren Muji left it open-ended on whether or not the Jets would still add a veteran quarterback. Right now, we know the room sits at Geno Smith, Bailey Zappe, Brady Cook, and now Klubnik. As a fan, I'd rather them just basically give Klubnik a chance to compete with Zappe for the number two job, because if Geno Smith goes down or the Jets are out of it, I don't need to see Tyrod Taylor or Cooper Rush play. Just let me see what we have in Klubnik. I don't know if Aaron Glenn and the Jets are viewing it through that lens, though. What are your thoughts on the quarterback room? Will they add another guy to that room?
I think they're studying that. They're deciding whether to do what you just said or try to bring in a veteran guy. There are really not that many. I mean, I don't think Tyrod Taylor is coming back. I just think he's got a chronic knee issue, and I think the Jets don't want to go down that road again. I mean, Cooper Rush is still out there. I personally think they need a veteran guy in the room, but I think what they're going to do is they'll let these OTAs play out. They'll see how these guys look in OTAs, and if it doesn't look great, by the time they go to mini camp in the middle of June, then maybe they bring a veteran in by then. But Bailey Zappe and Brady Cook combined career record of 4-9 as a starter. So I think you need to bring in a veteran guy. That's my personal opinion.
I'll tell you the one guy that I wouldn't call, and I'm a fan. Not that they would make this call, but did you see Russell Wilson in the Savannah Bananas uniform over the weekend? Doesn't look like he's ready to come and be a backup anywhere, right?
So was that real? I know he was there, but
playing.
He looked pretty thick, right? I thought that was edited. I didn't realize that was actually real.
Yeah.
He looked like he was gained a few LBs.
He was spending some time, I guess, with the Jet beat writers, watching the draft with all the food they were serving you guys, Rich.
I can attest to that for sure.
All right, the final two picks the Jets made before we give out an overall grade. And if you're watching live, make sure you like the video and you are subscribed to the channel. This is the Jets Collective. We come at you every week talking all things New York Jets. The Jets, they now had two final picks after they made some trades, of course. And the last two picks the Jets made, we'll do the first one here, the offensive lineman from Miami, the guard, Inez Cooper, second team All-ACC selection this past year. So the Giants took a Miami offensive lineman, Francis Malagoa, in the top 10, and the Jets get another Miami offensive lineman here in the sixth round. What can you tell us about Cooper, Rich?
Well, the right side of the Hurricane offensive line is playing in New York. So, yeah, Cooper is 6'6", 334. He's been a right guard pretty much his entire career. And I thought it was a good value that, you know, on the Scouts Incorporated, they had him at 114 on their list, and the Jets got him at 188. So that's a really good value. They did trade up to get him. He's played a lot of football at Miami, a very high level, obviously. He's a big dude. And like Aaron Glenn said when we were talking to him after the draft, he said, mass kicks ass. So the Jets trying to get bigger in the trenches and more physical. I don't know how well he moves. So if they're going to use a zone scheme, that might be a big adjustment for Cooper. But on the gap runs where it's man-to-man, you know, head-to-head, he should do well in those situations. I think he'll be Joe Tippmann's backup this year, and he is a self-proclaimed trash talker. So maybe that'll add a little spice to some of the Jet practice.
Yeah, a little nasty in there. You talk about how big Jackson is. I mean, Cooper's got an inch and 25 pounds on him. And we all watch Miami play, but I mean, am I really studying in real time the interior O-line? Not necessarily, but then you get ready for the draft, you start to dive in and do your homework, and this guy, he is nasty. He seems like the kind of guy, you know, that'll spit on you, and like when that, you know, not that you want that. I don't really mean spit on you, but you know what I mean. Like that vile, you know, that vile, big, nasty, dirty lineman underneath the scrum. Lord knows what he's grabbing, what he's twisting, what he's twisting. Like, and you see, I saw a lot of video of him running out of the tunnel at the U. And that, I mean, he exudes nasty and obviously good. So let's give it a shot, see what he's got.
Well, if you want nasty, I mean, Rich, the safety that the Jets took with their final selection, his last name, all I needed to see was that. And I'm like, all right, Payne. I like it. I mean, if you're going to be a safety, have the last name Payne. VJ Payne, safety from Kansas State. Dane Brugger had a fourth or fifth round grade on him in the Athletics, the beast that I always check out. So it just feels like they got great value. 6'3", 206 pounds, 4.4 speed. I feel like for a seventh round flyer, right, this guy maybe could help you on special teams right away. And I'm actually fascinated to see what Aaron Glenn and the Jets could do defensively, because I think he's a really versatile player that for whatever reason was sitting there in the seventh round.
Yeah, I mean, he ran really well. He's got the height, weight, speed. Our scouts people had him at 124 on their list, and so they get him at 228. So that's a tremendous value. The one knock on him is that, you know, he is such a high cut player, being 6'3". He did miss a bunch of tackles last year. He had 12 missed tackles. So that's a lot. Obviously, the Jets have had issues with missed tackles at their safeties. So they have a really crowded safety room right now. You know, you got Minkah Fitzpatrick. To me, he's the only lock as a starter. And then you have Malachi Moore back. You got Andre Sisco, but he's only on a veteran minimum contract. He's not even guaranteed to make the team. You got Dane Belton from the Giants, and now you have, you know, VJ Payne. So you got five safeties there. So I think they've done a good job of creating competition at safety and improving their depth.
He's big, he's strong, he's fast, and he's the seventh round pick. And it's a position where you got to make the room a whole lot better. So
you take a shot.
Yeah, it's really tough to criticize this. You love the fact that Minkah's there. I mean, if Payne's there last year without Minkah, what's he really learning? But just being around a pro like that on the film, you know, on the field, in the film session, you know, and I didn't watch Kansas State a lot this year, but watching some of his highlights, he is a violent, violent guy. I don't know if he's as violent as Victor Green, you know, popping back in the day, but I see a little Vic in him, which is a good thing.
That's a good, if he's that, then that's a good thing for the Jets.
I think every Jet fan out there will certainly agree. All right, let's give now our overall grades for the Jets draft class. And obviously, look, you never really know with any of these draft classes, but yeah, I've been surprised to see the amount of praise the Jets have received from some of the, you know, the biggest draft guys who do this stuff for a living year round. Rich, I'll start with you. What grade would you give Darren Mooji, Aaron Glenn, in the 2026 New York Jets draft class?
I am not a big grade guy. I know it's part of the job and we have to do it. And none of us really knows who the heck these guys are going to be. I just kind of look at, are they getting the value that we thought, how they operated throughout the draft. Now, the Jets, here's what I liked about what Mooji did. They had 9 picks to go into the draft, and they came out of it with 8 picks. But if you count up the points on the point value chart, they actually came out of it with a higher, more draft capital with 8 picks than they had with 9 picks going in. So that tells me he did a good job of maneuvering around the board. He was able to target. He made 4 trades. He was able to target Cooper, actually both Coopers. You know, he went up and got Omar. He got Inez, and then they traded up also for Klubnik. Didn't love that one. We talked about that. But I'm overall, if you make me give a grade, I'm going to give him an A-.
I find that ironic here. Rich is an adjunct professor, but he's averse to giving out grades. I mean, your students must love you. Hey, you did all right. A, F, whatever. You passed. Come on, adult Syracuse had standards up there, Rich. You got to give out those grades, man.
Well, in fact, as soon as we finish this podcast, I'll be reading final exams and grading my students from last night's class.
God bless you.
I mean, it's hard to project. Like I said, they got 3 guys in the top 24 on the board. So good value. 4 guys right at the top who are going to come in and play a lot as rookies. I mean, that's all you could ask for.
I give him an A. I give him an A here. You know, I'm more okay with the Klubnik pick than you guys. I'm not saying I love it, but it's not enough to bring that down to an A-, because everything that they identified and everything that we identified, you know, you got to get more sudden on offense. You got to get more vertical on offense. You got to get more depth in the trenches. You got to find the corner. You got to find the safety. Take a dart, throw a dart on a developmental quarterback. I really, really love what the Jets did. I feel very positive about this. And, you know, I think the dynamic, you know, Jake is known to be a little bit more grumpy or negative or whatever, reluctant to stand things favorably. And maybe I'm a little bit the opposite. But my optimism is really rooted in reality, not delusion. Like, Mooji's given us examples, many already. He knows what he's doing. And I think he had a great night. And I think the Jets obviously got to find a quarterback down the road. But the Jets' direction is the trajectory of the needle. It's going in the right direction. There's no doubt.
So I'm actually going to agree with Rich. I'm going to go A- as well. I thought the Jets had a really good draft. Again, I'm not going to, you know, change my opinion drastically just because I didn't like that they traded an extra 4th to get a guy they believe in at the quarterback spot. To me, they did great night one. I think the Omar Cooper trade back in solidified a great night for the New York Jets. The only reason why I wouldn't, I guess, go A+ or A is just because I was more of an Arvel Reese guy than a David Bailey guy. So I don't want to be disingenuous and be like, oh, I was Bailey the whole time. This is great. But I was fine with both players at the end of the day. And I'm going to steal a line from one of Rich's colleagues, Brian Costello, who's covered the Jets forever for the New York Post. He hates draft grades like Rich does. And he goes, I like to grade on logic. I think if you're grading the Jets on logic, the moves they made, the rationale behind them, I think they had a real plan and they executed said plan. And I am a big fan of what they did ultimately. So I'm going to go A-. I think they needed this. I think the fan base needed something to kind of grab onto that's positive, that they actually could be hopeful about. And I'll tell you what, Rich, when you guys start covering rookie minicamp in 2 weeks and OTAs, and you're going to see Kenyon Sadiq and Omar Cooper Jr. go up against air and no pads, they're going to make plays, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch instead of just having to watch an offensive tackle the last couple of years and evaluate anything they do.
We're going to have Kenyon Sadiq in the Hall of Fame in a couple of weeks. But, I like what Mooji's done this offseason, the last 2 offseasons. But just to throw in a little sobering reality here, it's not going to mean any. You got to get a quarterback. I mean, next year, we know the plan. Get it next year. I asked Aaron Glenn after the draft about, you know, the quarterback plan long term. And he said the right thing. Like, he's not going to throw Geno under the bus. He said, look, I'm not going to put a cap on Geno Smith and say this is only a 1-year situation, which is the right thing to say for the coach. You don't want to toss the guy out, you know, before he even takes a snap. So I get it, but we know the plan here is to get a quarterback next year. And until they do that and get the biggest piece to the puzzle, then the Jets are still going to be the Jets. You know, they got to get the quarterback right. And that will separate them from all the previous regimes.
BT back with us here. The connection dropped out. There you go.
I'm good, right?
We got you loud and clear.
Maybe I upset him with my take on that.
No.
It decided to bail out.
No, I think what happened, I was trying to grab one of my papers. I want to reference something. I thought I've had a rough day behind, you guys know, behind the scenes with this. I gotta fix some stuff up after. You know, just back to the Jets team speed. And we all know about, you know, Breece and Wilson and AD and Sadiq. They all fly, they're all sub 4.4s, right? Cooper is barely over a 4.4 at 4.42. And you look at even somebody like Mason Taylor, and he's not Kenyon Sadiq, but at his pro day, he ran a 4.59. And the NFL tight end range the desired range is really 4.65 to 4.7. And, you know, I'm not saying that Taylor's always a 4.59, but he did literally run that. And even Braylon Allen, who, you know, he had a high-end speed of 21.3 miles per hour and was one of the top, you know, and Isaiah Davis, one of the top 40 times at the combine when he was there, top 20. Like, I know, I get it. Geno, quarterback. But for the first time, guys, in a long time, I really don't think we'll be sitting there in the second quarter with 4 minutes to go and it's 13-3, 16-6. Jets are going to move the ball this year, man. Jets are going to score some points. Now, I know next year's next year with the quarterback. This offense is going to be interesting.
Well, I'll say this. I think what this draft has done is it has completely eliminated any excuse for Aaron Glenn and this coaching staff that they're going to be here for 2027 and get to actually cash in on these three first-round picks. And what we think, and I say that, we think, we don't know, because look at this year, will be a much better quarterback class. Because objectively speaking, no matter how any Jet fan feels about Geno Smith, and again, he wasn't my first choice, he can complete a pass. He's competent. He's two seasons removed from throwing for 4,000 yards. I mean, Geno Smith blindfolded is better than Justin Fields. He's better than an injured Tyrod Taylor, Brady Cook. The Jets actually have a solid offensive line. They have a 1,000-yard running back. They're going to get Braylon Allen back. They have Garrett Wilson. They added Sadiq and Omar Cooper to A.D. Mitchell and Mason Taylor. Again, if Frank Reich is not completely washed, I think he's an upgrade over Tanner Engstrand. Like, at the bare minimum, Rich, if the Jets can protect Geno, I think they can have a competent offense, and they're not going to be completely unwatchable like they have been so many years during this 15-year playoff drought.
I mean, it's been the worst offense in the league over 15 years. I mean, that's indisputable. I mean, the statistics bear it out. They have to be better than that, and I think Frank Reich is the key, right? How's he going to use these tight ends? He's got really three tight ends. We haven't even mentioned Ruckert. Ruckert's a good blocker. So how's he going to use the tight ends? How quickly is Cooper going to come along? I mean, Mitchell and Garrett Wilson, we know what they are, but you know, you need a third receiver. How quickly will Cooper come along? Rotating the running backs. Are they going to throw screen passes this year to Breece Hall? It seemed like nope. Now, maybe that was a Justin Fields thing last year. He just didn't throw the ball to Breece Hall. They have to incorporate him into the passing game. So the Jets have to be better coached this year. Otherwise, it's going to be another miserable year. The pieces are in place. They do have a very promising supporting cast. And I think Geno is a significant upgrade over Justin Fields. Now, is he going to throw a lot of interceptions? Yes, Geno's going to throw picks. That's who he is. He's a gunslinger, but at least he'll take chances and he'll push the ball down the field and he won't be afraid like Justin Fields was afraid.
And think about the offense, and we're all kind of in agreement that it's going to be more explosive, much more aesthetically pleasing to watch. Now you mix in a terrific young punter who's phenomenal, special number one. And sorry about that, guys. And then, Rich, I wanted to ask you this. The kicker that they signed from BYU, any intel on him? Do they really love him? Like, what?
I don't have any intel on him, BT. He's got a shot. I mean, because this kicking situation is wide open. You know, there was some talk that maybe they would draft a guy. They didn't. Cade York, I don't think, is the answer. We talked about the whole Nick Folk thing. I thought they dropped the ball on that one. But, the kid from BYU has a shot. Like, it's a good place. If I'm a rookie free agent kicker coming out of college, the Jets are the team I'd want to sign for because you know you're going to get a great opportunity.
No doubt about that. We're going to do some questions coming up at the end here. Real quick, gentlemen, before we get to this fun prize pick lineup that I made to get your thoughts on, everyone's going to be talking about the 2027 quarterback class. The three of us will spend, I'm sure, hours upon hours all throughout the next year talking about the latest there. But as we enter 2027, feels like all the mock drafts already have Arch Manning as the top prospect coming out, Dante Moore as well. Rich, what are you expecting? Is this going to be another one of those, you know, suck for Sam type of storylines that surrounds the Jets all year in regards to this time marching for Arch or whatever the saying will be for the top quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the 2017 season, you know, and Josh McCown was the quarterback and the whole narrative all year was the suck for Sam. At ESPN, I had to write a story every Monday on how all the college quarterbacks did the previous weekend, you know, like Rosen and Allen and Sam and Mayfield. It was like a weekly update and this long march toward the draft. I don't love it, but it's probably going to be the narrative because the experts are calling this maybe a historically good quarterback draft. Someone told me that maybe 12 quarterbacks could get drafted on the first, you know, 2 to 3 days.
No chance.
There could be five in the 12. First round. You know, it could
be 12 Hall of Famers. Yeah, I know. 12 Hall of Famers, Rich. This, I can't stand hearing this. Like, I hear this every year.
I didn't say Hall of – I just said drafted.
I know. Yeah. I'm being – see, I got you. I'm just messing with you, Rich. But what I'm saying is, like, until Dante Moore puts on 15 pounds, until Arch Manning actually plays like Peyton or Eli, let's tap the brakes. Like, I'm not going through this year. I'll watch these teams and I'll pay attention. I'm going to make you a promise right now. There's not a chance in hell that the Jets are picking 1, 2, or 3. They're going to win too many games. So my energy my focus is for the 2026 season. Hey, I sometimes I'm a clown, and sometimes clowns could juggle. I'm going to juggle the Jets, and I'm going to juggle college. But I'm not going to be so immersed in college that I don't watch the Jets with a deeper sense of happiness this year. Arch Man, if it was Arch Jones, I mean, what has he really done to college? Let's call for what it is. Let's be real. You grossly overrated. Arch Manning against the Buckeyes looked like a scrub, and that needs to be said.
Well, hold on.
That was like a scrub.
Yes, but that was the Ohio State defense that had four picks. I mean, they were the best. They were a historically great defense. Mendoza only put up 14 points against them.
I understand, though. I know, but what I'm saying is, and I know that they were on him, and they were pressuring him, and he was probably speeding himself up. I saw him short hop wide open receivers.
Did you watch him the last seven games of the year? Because, again, I'm with you, BT. He's got to prove it. But by the end of the season, Arch Manning was playing as well as any quarterback in the country. That's why there's hype around him.
Understood. But what I'm saying is the hype was unjustified and unnecessary early. He's had one half of one good season. That's just a fact. That's irrefutable. He might be the first overall pick, and he might even be better than Eli. Not going to be better than Peyton. Might be better than Eli. But come on. Enough of this. It's just, I think it's out of control. I think it's a lot.
I agree with both of you guys. I agree with BT. He is overrated because of his last name. But I also agree with Jake. He did play much better towards the second half of the year. The proof will be in the pudding this year. Now, he's got a really – now, I don't know. I'm not going to pretend I know all about the transfer portal, but he supposedly got a big-time wide receiver this year who came in. He's got a big-time NFL left tackle. You know, so the supporting cast – lends itself to a good year for Arch Manning. And if he's as good as everybody thinks or wants him to be, then he will be this year.
And look, it's him. It's Julian Sain. It's Dante Moore. It's CJ Carr. There's going to be someone that could emerge. And no one knew who Fernando Mendoza was at this time last year. So look, the way I look at it as a fan, BT, they have 3 first round picks. I'm rooting for wins. The Colts could be awful. The Packers could have an injury and be awful. Who knows? The Cowboys could be awful. The reason why the Jets have Garrett Wilson right now is because when Joe Douglas made the deal with Seattle to get 2 first round picks, Seattle thought they were a Super Bowl contender. Russell Wilson got hurt that year. And the Jets are picking at number 10 after they took Sauce with their own pick at number 4. So no Jet fans should be worried now about it. Root for wins. If they start 1-5 again, then the march for Arch or whoever can start. But for now, I want this team to actually win and give us a season. Be good. Yeah. Robert Saleh, who I don't think was a great coach, they were 6-3 and 7-4 in his second year before they collapsed. Give me some fake goodness. Give me a couple wins early to be excited about for once before we do the tanking conversation. That's what I want to see before we have to even talk about the 3 picks and 27 and the quarterbacks and all that.
Forget about fake news. Give me fake goodness. Let's start coining that. I like that. Fake goodness. I like that. You know, and the other thing, too, is, and this needs to be said, you know, independent of the draft, And I like the Jets situation is now viewed as much more healthy, at least today. It's got to come to fruition. But if you're a quarterback, and we touched on this, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Joe Burrow, but we're so focused on the draft, there could be a situation where somebody looks at the Jets that's not happy. They're like, man, they got some talent. I go there with that old line. We're cooking. You never know.
Well said. All right, guys.
Everybody's and they need final wins. Word. They need wins just to create a culture. I mean, Aaron Glenn talks about having a winning culture. You can't speak that into existence. You have to actually win that into existence. So I mean, true. That's, you know, you could talk all the cliches, whatever you want, coach speak. You can't build a culture that way. You have to do it through repeated success, winning games.
We are presented by Prize Picks. We'll get a Breece Hall contract update, then rip through some super chats before we wrap up shortly. So get those questions in if you have anything you want us to address. But we're presented by Prize Picks, guys. And let me put BT in the box. Here we go.
There you go.
You download the Prize Picks app and use the code HMA. Put $5 in, you'll get $50 available instantly. And Prize Picks already has a bunch of lineup options for all the top draft picks. So I put this one together because I knew we were going to talk about Arvell Reese and David Bailey. And I threw a Garrett Wilson one in there for good measure. So this is a 3-pick power play, $10 to win $60 over at Prize Picks. You tell me if this is a smart lineup that I made, BT. Garrett Wilson, more than 4.5 receiving touchdowns.
Yes.
David Bailey, more than 6.5 sacks.
He better.
Arvell Reese, more than 2.5 sacks. If that hits, those three things happen, $60 are coming to the Jake Asman bank account.
Well, we don't get a piece of the pie. Well, I know you together, but I thought we were 33 1/3% each, man. I thought we were a team. I thought we split things up.
You got a deal. Well, they didn't give me the money for the two of you guys yet.
No, I know. I like it. I try to put myself in your situation. I think we touched on Garrett a week or so ago, like over, was it 6 touchdowns? Or maybe it was still 4.5. And I said under, but listen, he's terrific. And if he's healthy, I could see that going over. Bailey better be over. Not by much, but I think he will be. Reese, because you don't know how they're going to use him. But that's a paltry number. And you got Burns, who's getting double teamed. I think I could see 3 for 3. I like it. How about you, Rich?
Definitely over on Garrett Wilson. I'm going to say under on Bailey. So, you know, because you're basically saying 7 sacks there for a rookie. I'm going to go under. And then for Arvell Reese, that's a close one. I'm going to say under there as well, because he's going to be playing a lot of inside linebacker. I don't know how many rush opportunities he's going to get with Burns and Carter and Thibodeau. So I'm going to go under there as well.
Other fuel for thought or food for thought. If the Jets offense, you know, I would keep saying it's going to be better. If it actually is better, if it actually got be good, well, then now the Jets will have some leads, and now Bailey can pin his ears back and a little bit easier to get. It's tough when you're losing 30-10 and the other team's running the ball 35 times to bleed the clock out. Nobody's getting sacks then.
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm going under on Bailey, because I don't know, if the Jets will be playing with a ton of leads this year. So under on Bailey for me and Reese, but over on Wilson.
Make your own prize picks. Make your own lineups. Download the Prize Picks app. Use the code HMA. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the Jets Collective. All right, before we get to the Super Chats, Rich, do you have a Breece Hall update? We know the Jets and Breece Hall were supposed to get a deal done. It didn't happen before the draft. They used the franchise tag on Breece, but I know you asked a couple questions to Darren Mooji about the latest with Breece.
Yeah, he was a little evasive when I first asked him that question, but, you know, it's on his things to do list. They thought, according to Mooji, they thought they were in a good place before the tag deadline. And then they put talks on hold once they tagged him. They have 11 weeks. Basically, it comes down to 11 weeks before the deadline. If they don't get a deal done, he'll play on the tag, which is $14.3 million. To me, it shouldn't be that complicated. I mean, you got the Kenneth Walker contract. He's got 3 years, $43 million. He is basically playing for the franchise tag. It's $14.3 a year. His first 2 years are guaranteed. Basically, the Chiefs gave him 2 franchise tags guaranteed, $28.7 million. I got to think the Breece Hall contract is very, very similar. The one wild card, you have 2 running backs who are looking for new deals in Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson. They're obviously going to be over Breece Hall, but do they raise the ceiling and then bring Breece up with him? That's the question. I think it should – I'm not ready to say yet that they're going to get it done with Breece Hall. I wonder how much he really wants to be here long term. I wonder, but then you also have the injury factor. You know, if he plays for $14 million, he's probably leaving another $14 million in guaranteed on the table. So there's the injury risk as well. So I'm not ready to say they're going to absolutely get a deal done with Breece Hall.
I hope they get it done. I think they'll get it done, but Rich, you're the information guy with this, so I think you nailed it. But my other question would be, you know, forget about Hall. Do they view down the road the tandem of Allen and Davis interesting enough where they would actually, you know, they would go into a situation comfortably without Breece, thinking those two guys can get the job done?
Yeah, that's neither one has, they both shown little flashes here and there. And then Allen hurt the knee last year when they had him, you know, for some reason returning kickoffs, and then he hurt his knee. And Davis showed a couple of flashes toward the end of the year. So I would say probably not as like the number one running back for either of those guys. If they moved on from Breece, I would suspect they would go and draft one next year.
Super Chats, now's the time. Kyle Clifton starts it off. He writes in for Rich. New York Jets were said to do extensive work on Cole Payton. He went at 178. Was that at all a smokescreen? My buddy Neil thinks they panicked, went off board, and overdrafted Klubnik. Your thoughts?
Well, just because, I mean, they do extensive work on all these players. You know, some more than others, obviously. But just because they do extensive work on a guy doesn't mean he's way up on their draft board. It's called due diligence. And they do work on players that we never even find out about. You know, so I just think that they felt there was such a significant gap between Klubnik and Payton, and also Nussmeier. How about Nussmeier going in the seventh round to the Chiefs? I think there was some injury concern there with his spine. He had something going on there, and I heard his interviews weren't that great. So the Jets clearly had Klubnik way above Nussmeier on their draft board.
He's also not a really good athlete, Nussmeier.
Not as good as Klubnik. Klubnik's actually a pretty good athlete. I think he ran 4.69 at 6'2", so he can move around, you know, pretty decently. Cole Payton is a really good athlete. Some people thought he could have been like a Taysom Hill type of guy, but the Jets obviously felt otherwise.
There's actually a video of Cade Klubnik outrunning David Bailey when Bailey was at Stanford. So
I saw that. I saw that today. I did.
We'll have to pull the all 22 and play that on a future episode. Yeah. Esmond writes in, the dream three at lunchtime. Thank you, Esmond. Cade gets his chance this year. No holdbacks. Why not? Let's be open to the opportunities in front of us right now. I mean, look, if Brady Cook's going to play games, you know Cade Klubnik is going to find his opportunity at some point to play. Ironically, the year we were all so concerned with the health of a starting quarterback and whether or not, you know, this player would be able to make it through the year was the year Rodgers was coming off the Achilles. In 2024, he actually started all 17 games. Go figure. But, Rich, you know this, covering the Jets as long as you've been around. Cade Klubnik is going to play at some point. The Jets always have multiple quarterbacks that start for them.
You can write it down right now. There'll be at least three quarterbacks who start for the Jets this year. That's just how it goes. Look, Geno is the guy. They're going to ride Geno. And Geno's a durable guy. You know, he doesn't really get hurt. So they'll ride him as long as they can ride him. And if they get eliminated with a few games left, then they'll go to Klubnik. Like, why not at that point? Give him a chance, assuming he's progressing and absorbing the offense. And I suspect he will. Then you give him a chance to play.
You think Geno's going to be a good leader for this team, guys?
I do, you know, and I wouldn't have said that a few years ago, but I think he's matured a lot. The first time through, frankly, he was immature.
He
had a couple of off the field things, the thing with IK. I don't think he was a good leader back then. And maybe Geno would even say the same thing. I think he's matured a lot. He's 35. From what I'm understanding, he is taking a leadership role. So I think it's encouraging.
Next one is from Curly Norman, who says, over under how many games blown by the Jets kicker this year? I mean, last year, Nick Folk's the reason why essentially they don't have, you know, the number one pick. And this year, they don't have Nick Folk, and I'm already fearing for the worst, but I hope that is not the case. We talked about the kicker situation earlier, Curly, if you want more analysis there. How about this one from Doc Jetfan, who says, fellas, was there ever any conversation about leveraging the 3/4 to move up for Jermaine McCoy? They could have stashed him in 2026. If necessary. So this was the Tennessee corner who was thought to be maybe a top 15 player and he ended up sliding all the way to D3. Rich, do you have any insight if the Jets were interested at all in McCoy?
Well, they passed on him a couple of times. Well, once they passed on him, they took Pons, you know, and I think once they got Pons, they felt that they were okay. They still have a young player in Az Thomas. They still have Quantes Stiggers, who I thought had a couple of flashes last year. He's a bigger type corner, which Aaron Glenn likes a lot. So, and then they have Brandon Stevens coming back. They got Brownlee in the slot. So I didn't, the knee situation with McCoy, he may need another procedure. Yeah. So I never really thought that the Jets would take him in the fourth round.
They don't have that luxury. They're on a very different timeline than, you know, like the Bills or, you know, the Chiefs or the Niners or, you know, the Eagles, you know, good teams. Like they just they can't do that.
Yeah.
Alan checks in. How about a Bills fan watching the Jets collective here? We appreciate the super chat, though. Alan's Alps, thank you. Jets GM was the adult in the room taking Bailey. Cooper was excellent, and Pons was the best corner in the draft. Absolutely a master class by the Jets. How about that? A Bills fan praising the New York Jets draft.
I want to hate Bills fans the way I do Patriots fans and Dolphins fans, but I can't. And I don't. And I don't even try to reconcile that anymore. Like, I just accept it because their torturous past, not nearly as torturous as us, but it's not that dissimilar. I don't know. Like, when a Bills fan says something nice, I accept it. When a Patriot or a Dolphin fan says it, I tell them to go to hell. Not interested.
I don't like Bills fans because I had an awful experience at a game. I went to a Jets-Bills game, Thursday Night Football 2016. They actually won that night. Fitzpatrick back in Buffalo played great. One of the only good moments of that season. And I was harassed the entire game by drunk Bills fans. It was early September. Weather was still nice. Mm-hmm. And it was so bad, BT, that me and my brother and my friends who were at this game, we drove up from Ithaca to go. We had to take our Jets gear off leaving in the parking lot because we didn't want to be harassed any longer by the fans. So it was, I will never forgive the Bills fans. I know it's not everyone, but I'll never forgive the Bills fans for that. So because of that, I will always root against the Bills.
I remember
that's different.
You mentioned that game, Jake. So I'm walking into the press gate like a few hours before that game, and there's some Bills fan. He had this forlorn look on his face, and he had a sign that said, "Our playoff drought is old enough to drive." By that, it was 16 years for the Bills fans at that point. I took a picture of the guy and I posted it. I asked him if I could take his picture. I posted it on Twitter. I thought it was hilarious. And here we are years later with the Jets playoff drought is basically almost old enough to drive.
Am I conflating years? Was that EJ Manuel?
That was 2016. Tyrod was the quarterback. Rex was the coach that year.
I know Rex was the coach. Yeah. No, okay.
Fitzpatrick played out of his mind that night and the Jets won. And that was really the last good thing that happened to Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Jets, I think, after that.
I'm pretty sure a week later was the 6 interception game in Kansas City. So just like that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the pick fest, the 6 pick.
Let's rip through these last couple of super chats. Thanks everyone for being here. We got over 535 people watching live, which is a monster number for the middle of the day.
Nice.
On a YouTube show. So appreciate everyone who's here live. If you're not here live, make sure you're subscribed to the channel and we'll be with you every single week here on the Jets Collective YouTube channel. Big Fella says, with the success of the special teams unit, does Herb Charles make the team? In my humble opinion, he won't be here. All right, Rich, break down the early projected 53. Is there a slot for Herb Charles?
Only the Big Fella could ask a question in April on the Jets special teams. So, yeah, it's going to be tough because, I mean, what are you going to carry? 6 receivers? And so you already know, Arian Smith is going to make the team. I mean, they're not going to cut a 4th-round pick. So you got your first 3 guys with Wilson, Mitchell, and Cooper. And then you got Isaiah Williams, who is going to make the team. And you got Arian Smith. So that's 5 right there. How many – I think you need another receiver type guy in there. You know, Williams and Smith are special teams kind of receivers. So I don't know if they'll carry Irv Charles and he's coming off a major knee injury as well. So that's going to be a close one. I agree with the question. I don't think it's a lock by any means.
Irv Charles. I never thought we'd get an Irv Charles question. Thank you very much to the Big Fella for that. Dion says, Gino, 3,696 yards, 20 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Better or worse, BT?
Better on the yards. Worse? Better on the yards. Better on the touchdowns. Lower on the picks. Better across the board.
That's a good year for Gino. You're optimistic. I love it.
I am.
Rich?
Yeah, those numbers are pretty – I could see him being right around those numbers. Yeah.
I definitely could see him throwing between 22 and 25 touchdowns. I think they're going to run the ball more than people realize, too. I know they have all these weapons, but I think the different alignments they could have, if teams are trying to be prepared for the weapons on the outside, that's when Geno can audible and you go to Breece Hall and Braylon Allen and hope you could get some matchup advantages there. Sean writes in, go Jets. We could turn the ship around. He also follows up and says, Breece honestly is the key to open this offense up this year. Hope he stays long-term. I mean, if he's healthy, Rich, I think he could have the best year of his career now that he actually has, you know, an offensive line in front of him. And, you know, Geno Smith is going to, I think, open things up because teams might have to actually respect the forward pass, a novel concept.
Yeah, I mean, Breece, I thought he was underutilized last year. I thought they could have used him more in the passing game. He did have the 1,000 yards. I don't think it was his best rushing year, though. I think he actually was, as a rookie, I mean, he was running great and unfortunately had the major knee injury. I thought he left some yards on the table last year. You know, if you look at some of the metrics, the detailed, you know, advanced level stats, but he's still a good running back.
Let's keep going here. Veteran Jet fan writes in, who were the Jets trying to trade into round three for? This is a good question because Muji did say after night two that they had some talks about coming back up and making a deal. It didn't happen. Any insight, Rich, from what you've heard on who the player
might
have been?
Maybe it was Cade Klubnick. Who knows? you know,
could it have been Allard?
I don't know that. He did say they were trying to get in there. I would suspect, you know, I'd have to look at the draft board and see what, I mean, the way the draft fell. But he did admit they were trying to. GMs hate going an entire round without a pick. You know, it's just they get antsy. And I think he was definitely trying to get in there.
Rich, do you have a sense? Have you heard, you know, what the first couple of the games of the season might look like? We know the opponents. Any innuendo, anything going on?
I do know. You know, I just have a funny, could it be Jets at Titans to open up?
I'll see you in Nashville. Bob Sala.
Could it be Jets and Sala? You know, like the right. It seems like that revenge theme goes every year. Last year we had Jets and Rodgers. So maybe
Sam versus Zach Wilson when, you know, in 2021. I don't care what I have to do to try and get this bet placed anywhere. I'd be stunned if they're not going to Nashville week one against Sala. Stunned.
Wow. Wow,
that would be that would be an interesting one.
A couple of years ago, they were in Nashville week two, right? I was out there for that Jets trip. That was week two. Okay,
and they won. Ralphie writes in, "What are we doing with the $47 million in cap space? Are we extending Tippmann, bringing in free agents?" Ralphie, we'll definitely go more in depth on this in future episodes. But Rich, is there one thing you could quickly highlight that you think the Jets will do with some of this leftover cap space they still have?
Well, I think they would like to extend Tippmann, but that probably won't be until like a summertime thing, you know, and then they could roll over the unused cap space into next year. I mean, they're already going to have $100 million in cap space next year, which is just an insane amount of cap space. You always want to keep extra money just in case. Like we said, could they sign a veteran receiver? I could see that. Could they sign? It won't be AJ Brown. Obviously he's going to the Patriots. I mean, could they sign a veteran quarterback? Yeah, but it'd only be for like a couple of million dollars. So they're going to have a ton of cap space left over.
Big fella with another super chat. He goes, Rich, do you think the Jets moved up because they wanted to get ahead of the Indianapolis Colts to draft Klubnick? Well, you mentioned Denver earlier. Were the Colts linked to Klubnick at all?
The Colts were right there too. So yeah, that could absolutely be a possibility. The Colts are, obviously, they have Daniel Jones. They're pretty committed to him, but Richardson's on the way out, and so they need a young guy in the pipeline. So, quite possibly, yeah.
Big fella's dialed in, man. He's big fella's into it, man. He's all about it. Very nice.
He's the man. Big fella is a longtime listener of mine. He is a great, great Jet fan. This one is from Thunderlips. He actually gifted what's called 5 memberships. So I haven't explained what the process of membership is actually like to BTRH, but basically it's just another way for people to support what we do here on the channel. You'll get a badge next to your name. I'm working on making some cool Jet and Jet Collective related badges. Your comments will be highlighted in the chat for people to see, and we'll have some other cool perks. So Thunderlips, you're the first to actually gift 5 memberships to the community.
Yeah.
What I do on my show, guys, is I usually play a different drop. It's a Jet chant, something funny. So I pulled this from the Jets draft over the weekend.
Are you a happy guy?
Oh, my goodness. Let's go.
We're all happy. Thunder
we're happy.
Five gifted memberships. That was Woody yelling at Frank Reich when they took Kenyon Sadiq. So, Rich, you're 1,000% spot on. That Sadiq pick does not happen unless Frank Reich was all about it.
Are those our first five memberships for the channel?
Those are the first.
Awesome, dude.
All right. Awesome.
This one is from Benjamin, our final super chat here. Concern on the 27 QB scouting with the club dig pick, ? Go IC. Oh, Benjamin and IC Bomber. Go Bombers. Love that. Rich, I don't think they were concerned about next year's QB class. I just think you draft the quarterback every year when your starting quarterback is going to be 36 and he's on essentially a one-year deal. Get a guy in the pipeline. They didn't take anyone last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they were absolutely determined to get one in this year's draft, which probably explains why they made that such a big trade up. It's the old Ron Wolf theory, you know, the great Packer GM who's in the Hall of Fame, you know, always take a quarterback. You know, they usually, unless they're total bust, they retain value. I mean, you could end up, who knows, if Klubnik develops, you could trade him at some point a couple of years down the road. So they hold value, and it could be a bargaining chip down the road.
I don't know if it's going to be apples to apples, but think about years ago when the Pats had, obviously, Brady, Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. You know, maybe some sort of replication there. I mean, that would be optimal, but, you know, you never know. And, no, to me, and it's a really good question, to me it's not a referendum on – well, they, you know, 18, because a lot of people think it's a ridiculous move, and I'm more okay with it than most, but I get the criticism. Boy, that's an aggressive leap for a quarterback that nobody really saw coming. That should not cloud, in my opinion, how anybody views their ability to, you know, with clarity, kind of navigate the 27 quarterback crop. I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Guys, what a show. Rich, I mean, is there a sense of relief for you as a reporter that the draft's in the books? I know, you know, rookie minicamp is on the horizon now. I mean, from my point of view as a fan, it's like a nice sense of relief. And again, I feel like BT and I are excited again about, you know, the direction of the team. So what does it feel like from a reporter's lens?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long weekend. It's a long 3 days. They're late nights. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get home on Saturday night until I think about 10 or 10:30. I think I mentioned this on last week's episode. It felt like we were building up to the draft since last November when they traded Sauce and Quinnen on the same day. So it was like this long, long buildup. And then it finally happens. So there's a little bit of a letdown after it's over. But I'm thankful that just to take a break, take a breather. My softball season has started, so I got to get into that a little bit. Got to get into shape a little bit. So, you know, that's what I'm focused on.
Well, what number is Samini getting penciled in love with hitting the two hole? What are you, Judge? You're Ben Rice? Who are you?
Well, we're still in preseason, BT. So okay. We're practicing. We got a scrimmage on Thursday or Friday, and so next week's the opener. I'll let you know.
Nice. By the way, Jake, how was Pittsburgh? I saw your producer getting some great video and audio, and I saw the shots from the bar. You have a good time out there?
Yeah, great turnout of Jet fans. I was just thinking, though, as we were there, I'm like, man, this is going to be even bigger a year from now. They potentially have a new coach. They're going to likely take a quarterback early, 3-1s. It's just as much fun as Pittsburgh was. The excitement was always going to be capped, I think, because we all knew, in all likelihood, they're not finding their long-term answer at quarterback in this draft. But next year's going to be crazy in D.C., so I'm already looking forward to that.
If nothing else, there's energy, you know, and again, different degrees of optimism / delusion / self-loathing, hating, miserable Jet fandom. But like, it does seem that the worms turned a bit. Like, I'm not saying the Jets are back because it's been so long, but man, I am, I'm pretty enthused, and I'm not afraid to say it. I like where the Jets are right now. I really do.
Love it. We're going to be back next week talking all about it. BT, I got my Knicks cup here. I'm going to the Garden tonight. So I appreciate you guys being able to record this episode early today so I can watch the Knicks hopefully, you know, win game five later.
Dude, if they don't run the offense through Cat again, who looked like Magic Johnson the other night, hitting guys, cutting on the baseline with 10 assists, then we're going to have a big issue. I'm going to destroy Mike Brown tomorrow on Unleashed. But I think the Knicks win by about 12 or 13 tonight. Have a good time.
Let's go from your lips to God's ears. A big thank you to everyone who tuned into our show. He's Rich Samini. He's Brandon Tierney. My name is Jake Asman. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. Check out Rich's work on ESPN and, of course, ESPN.com. Subscribe to BT's YouTube channel, BT Unleashed, and you can check me out every single day on my YouTube channel. Just search Jake Asman. It comes right up. And subscribe to the channel there. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring our show. Like the video on your way out. Subscribe to the channel. Check it out in audio form, and we'll talk to you next time on the Jets Collective. See everybody.